your Android system, free app on KBOO.FM. And in that manner, we broadcast to all.
And thank you, Teresa. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll kick off Flashpoints. Today, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with journalist Roberts about his news about Colombia. Hillary Clinton. Dick Becker of the Answer Coalition responds to Obama's State of Encore broadcast of an interview about the U.S. role in the coup in Honduras. At 11 today, both Between the Covers A, instead of War and Family, two novels, The Blue Between Sky and Water and the Center of the World. That's all coming up this morning. But first, Chris Andrea with headlines, interviews, and commentary. And that is so much KBOO member. You can become one by going to KBOO.donate today.
My landlord will like the better the landlord.
KBOO Action Free 2016, a rally and march organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination. More information.
Hello, neighbors. If you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors. You know you should fight for a right for the common good.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, January 14th, 22, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM. This guest is James Henry. He is an economist at the International Columbia University Center for Sustainable International Investment. The go-to man for all things financial and economic in China. Perhaps inscrutable and certainly one of the in global markets. China has a magnetic field that sucks everything. So realize while the United States money into very China has been pouring investment and certainly in. Literally, I do mean it, and I hate using that word in the world. The Chinese government has a particular to every country in the world. Those departments are charged with finding out everything about resources that might be of any interest whatsoever now or in the future. Any interest at all to China and China's development. To China. And that's where China is putting it in world affairs, not in playing fat cop. That said, a couple of quick head of the ranches around Burns, whose cattle wildlife refuge. Armed group is saying that he didn't give them. He's saying he did not give this armed group of us to enter his property. He then riding roughshod over, let's say, private property across that area, the remote part of Eastern Oregon, vast, empty, open, indeed a fragile environment for many, many types and creatures that, not to mention the people, as there have been, and they have divided the nation in much the same way as the U.S. came into Iraq. Tension between Sunni and Shia peacefully coexisted. And now you have that with the arrival of the U.S. conflict begins. We really are. We are ignorant militias ready to go, or what's going on, or any of the information that one would need to even begin to use the at hand, the issues of that that's locked in the land. All of it is back to the land that we stand on to win, no matter how long it takes. So the militia bands still at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. It's amazing it took so long. At the end, I'm giving out a few numbers that you could call. U.S. Forest Service says its officials reported inadvertent callers on helicopter flights in wilderness, which is restricted to putting calls. Mistakes happen. Nobody's perfect. 4 feet and a tail. 3 of the 6 utilities at Coal Strip Power Plant have helped write legislation in Washington State and Oregon State that could threaten future operations of the second largest. So that gets into a little more detail than we have time for right now, because I want to bring back James Henry, as we said before, former chief economist for McKinsey & Company, currently City Center for Sustainability. Somebody who knows his way around the Chinese economy, if anyone does. Good morning. Thank you so much for being back with us today, James.
Good to be here.
Well, so in recent weeks, you've written extensively on China and its effect on global markets, and this in the context of a big partnership. We're just about down to the playing field. But China, of course, what's going on, the effects are, of course, enormous. We're seeing them immediately now in Wall Street. But the investments China's made in its infrastructure shifted the ballast. Can you tell us what actually happened in China?
Well, there's a couple different influences. I don't know if you're making the rounds, but
yes.
About the 2008 financial crisis in the U.S. and the world. But one of the themes decades for economists and the growth of the U.S. mortgage market year in, year out. And so therefore, they thought it was a very safe bet. They almost didn't pay a time in China, as we've had a similar kind of tendency not to look below the sheets here. It was 6 to 7% growth every year. What we learn now is that most of that growth has been driven by the borrowing, public debt, domestic debt, national income is north of 200%, and maybe as high as 200%. China has been without there being real concern about. So that's one factor. The other factor is that the Chinese stock investment in China is under-regulated, basically.
Wild East.
Exactly. Well, but it is definitely true of Shanghai market. So 2014 to new Chinese growth down that non-performing loan. There was excess capacity in tea and steel. The Shanghai market rose 135%. And this was all financed by speculators, each other. That resulted in an enormous bubble in terms of relationship to the Chinese stock market to the real way out of proportion to what was really happening with the slowdown. Last year, it's fallen in a couple big steps in percent, but since June, it's fallen about 50%. So the world stock market suddenly kind of wake up, not the stable growth vehicle that they counted on, and for their own stock, now heavily powered by what's called high frequency trading.
Yes.
So there's a lot of momentum trading going on, and it's just that are trading around the planet. So there was a waking up to say, well, where did all that debt really go? Turns out that when you look closer at it, a lot of it went into big real estate projects that are sitting empty. And they're trying hard to switch to a new growth model. The consumer sector, household income, developed countries, provides most of the demand. The household sector in China only accounts for about 40 to 45% of GDP. The gap between per capita GDP and per capita household income in China, that's what the house is able to find to close. The third thing is that China's trying to get hold of its currency market you know, sort of currency controls and trade. And they've been trying to liberalize that in order to allow China's major role in the world economy. They've gradually liberalized their exchange rate. Unfortunately, they've done this in an awkward pump up the economy and more debt, more deficit spending. They've taken a big hit. The capital rate has soared more than $1 trillion, wealthy investors in particular, but also the corporate sector. You see these new deals where people are buying up U.S. companies.
Hang on to that thought just a second, James. I hate to ask this, and I hate doing it myself,
I would say, you know, there's no easy solution to this problem. China's going to be adjusting its growth model for a while. The rest of the world has to get used to the fact that China's in percent, and it's going to go through a period which its currency is going to be competing with other countries. So that's why it became dependent on Chinese, you know, Australia, Brazil, South Africa, partners China, and also China's potential competitors like Japan and worried about a currency war. So these are real problems. They're not going to be
able to end it. Indeed, and into that, and into all of this, introducing the